Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to Atlantic Bushcraft Adventures. Tonight we are on episode 223, and we're going to be talking a little bit about how to keep you and your gear clean and dry when you're out there on your adventures. Now, before anybody gets smart, I can hear it now. It's the first thing I thought of. Just don't go when it's raining. So let's get that out of here right now.
We all intend to go when it's not raining. That doesn't mean it doesn't change when you're out there. Weather changes.
Things Weather happen. Changes a lot, especially if you get stuck being out longer than expected. Or if you're rolling the dice where it's like, you know, that 40% chance of rain, that's probably going to be okay, and then it ends up downpouring. Because that's happened pretty much to anybody that spent any real amount of time in the woods. They expected the weather to be one thing, and then it turned into something completely different.
So, you know, I've heard something interesting with that. When it says 40% chance of rain, it's actually 100% chance of rain, but in your area, 40% of the area will receive rain.
I've heard that too, and I don't know if there's any truth to it or not. I mean, either way, it still means 40% of somewhere in your area has a chance of getting rain.
Yeah. So it's just an interesting way of looking at it. But yeah, I mean... But rain's not the only way you get wet.
No, and that's the other thing on this, is it could just be a damp area you're in. Could be swampy area, especially when you're going to places that you've never been before. If you do the old topographical dart throw, which, I mean, I was only saying in jest, but literally, I mean, I have picked out some spots, maybe not by throwing a dart, but just looking at a topographical map and going, that looks like a cool spot, let's go there. You know what I mean?
I have definitely done that too. Darn it.
Shoot. Uh-oh. It's not sounding good on Ben's end. But in any case, I figured on my side anyway, this is kind of Ben's topic. I was a little blank for one this week. Not going to lie. But a couple things that I'd like to touch on this one is there's going to be some repellent areas and like additives and things like that, doing some waterproofing yourself, and then there's going to be things you can actually do while you're traveling and setting up that may assist you as well. And those are the two big things that I was thinking of covering. Ben, what about yourself?
That's a good idea. I know I got a few ideas that I just wanted to toss out there. And I think the first one I was going to start with was just in prepping your gear. So like, you're going out, have some things that are kind of prevented. So one of the obvious things for you is have some kind of rain suit, a garbage bag, something you can put over yourself in the case it rains to get the rain off of you. We've talked about this a little bit in the past. Depending on the weather, you may not be able to prevent yourself from getting wet, but you can probably prevent yourself from getting absolutely soaked. And there's a huge difference between being damp and being soaked to the bone. And I think we've both been in both situations many a time in our lives.
So. Yeah, it's a good... it's safe to say that damp is by far better than soaked, because once you're soaked, you really start running the risk of losing a lot of heat, and it's just so much harder to get dry. Damp, generally, if you can get out of the rain, your own body heat's going to burn that off in a relatively short amount of time. When you're soaked, nuh-uh. You're looking at something that you need to be dried off, or long periods of time to dry off by your own body heat. And realistically, even in the summer, especially here in Nova Scotia at night, cooler temperatures, that could lead to a lot of problems, even if you're traveling.
Yeah. So, I mean, I usually try to carry something, but the reality is sometimes I don't. But we've talked a bit about it, so I don't want to concentrate on that in particular. But you can get ponchos. You can get cheap ones from the dollar store. You can get them from Walmart. You can get just a garbage bag with a hole cut over it, or you can buy just a professional rain suit, whatever you want to get that from.
And I've seen everybody in the woods, I've seen people in the woods from everything from like the oil skins you would get on a fishing boat. You know, well, not real oil skins, I guess, the hillbilly oil skins, the $15, bib pant and throw over plastic tarp coat from Walmart, or what was $15, now they're probably 50. But anyway, everything from that to literally $400 and $500 rain suits going into the woods. And one thing I've learned, for rain proofness, not a lot of difference between the two, honestly. At the end of the day, what really comes down to the higher end stuff is it moves better, makes less noise, and is way more comfortable while it's on your body.
And durability sometimes.
Yeah, and durability.
But honestly, I found that there's quite a variance in that. Sometimes you can get one that's durable and cheap and very waterproof. Sometimes you can get one that's durable and expensive and fairly flexible, but like there's a lot of money involved in like one that's really good. And honestly, almost none of them beat a good plastic bag in the end.
And I've said this on motorcycle courses as I teach. The best rain gear on the planet is still only water resistant because most rain gear, if not all rain gear, has some design of breathability to it, which means the moisture next to you needs to escape because otherwise you're basically inside your own personal sauna. The downside of that is if it has breathability, that means it has permeability. Now, what level of that is, you know, it depends on the breathability and the materials and stuff like that. But at the end of the day, they're all just water resistant, not waterproof. The only thing that's really waterproof is, as Ben said, basically that garbage bag or something like that. Something you could literally put water in and carry it like a container. But the downside of those is, if you don't get wet from the outside in, you're going to get wet from the inside out. Every little bit of perspiration from your body is just going to linger. And I don't know which is worse, honestly. It's a toss-up between being soaked from the outside elements or literally basting in your own juices from the inside out.
But for a light sprinkle, it makes a lot of sense. If it's, especially if it's hot and raining hard, you're going to get wet either way. Like, there's just no avoiding that. And the best thing you can really do is try to find some decent shelter and wait it out, which is a legit method. Like, find something. We've done trips where we were kayaking in the past, and it started raining while we were kayaking. We pulled into the site, and the very first thing we did was pull out a tarp and just cover ourselves and all our gear so we'd stay drier. And so that helps. Like, you know, in extreme circumstances, set up a shelter or find shelter. You can find something like an overhang or something where the rain isn't as strong and sort of get out of the worst of it. It kind of brings it. Did your parents ever teach you to get out of the rain? You know, but it's true, right? Like, the best method is to avoid the wettest places when it's raining. So if you have that opportunity in under tree cover, usually it's not raining as heavily as out in a field. Things like that can be used. The next thing I wanted to talk about, because I didn't want to linger on the personal gear, realize that the best method to stay dry might actually be to take off as much clothes as you can and keep that dry. And then once the rain stops, dry yourself off and put your clothes back on, because honestly,
and that's a method I find myself using more than anything. Honestly, I just bite the bullet, except I'm going to get wet. Cause if I put my rain gear on, it's just the time, you know what I mean? Like you said, light sprinkle, something like that. Yeah, I may whip out the old raincoat and throw it on, or a poncho or something like that. But if it starts raining like it did here today in Nova Scotia, and I mean it was just nothing and then all of a sudden torrential downpour, I'm just going to bite the bullet and say, yep, guess old Roberto's getting wet today. I'll just do what I need to do. As soon as I feel myself, you know, getting chilly in any way, shape, or form, or hopefully before I reach that point, I've already set up some sort of shelter, maybe a fire if I have the availability to, if not, definitely some good shelter to get me out of the wind and rain, and then just change into something dry. And to me, that is one of the better methods, for me anyway, when the temperature's warm, of course. The colder it gets, the less viable that is, because, you know, cold and dampness generally don't go good together. But yeah, I like that one personally, especially for running around in the summer. I'm not endorsing it as everybody should do this, because like I said, people's mileage is definitely going to vary. I have a higher tolerance to cold than somebody else may have, and somebody may have a higher tolerance than I have. And it's not going to track the same. So know yourself, know your body, but that is one I do a lot. The only problem with that is generally your footwear is the only thing that you can't really switch out of easily. And if you have rubber boots and you're getting soaked like that, it's running down your body and into your boots. And if you've got anything else, then it's just going from the boots in. But there's things you can do about that too, and we'll come up to that as we go along.
Well, take for example, when I'm portaging, I usually do have things of footwear. And one set is designed to go in the water. So I have, I think they're called Drain Makers, but they're Columbia boot, but they're designed to get wet, and a lot of the water runs out of them. So I'll walk up rivers and stuff with those, and then I have a set that I'm keeping dry. So that's an option. But how do you keep everything else dry? So, okay, you can't prevent yourself from getting totally soaked in some situations. How do you keep some gear dry And this is where I think there's a few methods you really want to take into consideration. One is line your backpack with a decent waterproof bag and put all your gear in that, or use dry bags if possible, or a combination thereof, which is what I actually do. Some of my gear, my most sensitive gear, is in a dry bag, crushed down and put in the bottom of my backpack where it's safe. Oftentimes, everything else is inside of one large garbage bag that's inside my pack. So dry bags inside that plastic bag, and that keeps it really good. You can get covers for your backpack, but honestly, that's a lot like a
raincoat.
Like your rain jacket.
And that's where I was actually going to start was, you know, the bare minimum would be a backpack cover. And a lot of hiking backpacks, they have them tucked up underneath and you can pull them out and cover it over. But the best solution is what Ben said. Basically reverse layering. You layer up to keep warm, you layer down to keep things drier. So like my battery banks and stuff like that for when I take my phone and stuff, that's inside a Ziploc bag, which I may wrap up in a shirt and put inside my dry bag with my clothes and crush that down. And then I might have my backpack cover on over that just because my backpack has one. I can pull it out and flip it over and it is something. But those tend not to be the most durable things on the planet. I have ripped a couple of them just walking through the woods and ripped them fairly easily too.
But that multi-layered method really protects your gear. And keeping things in separate bags really helps because sometimes you have no choice but to open up a bag. And so that means everything else is still wet. So if some water gets in your pack, it's still generally most of it safe. I keep my food separately with a dry bag oftentimes, and that becomes my bear bag. So when I have to do it with my food, I put it in a dry bag, keeps it sealed, keeps the smell down, keeps it protected. And I hang that in a tree and I don't have to worry about it anymore. So yeah, that's I nearly lost you there for a second.
I was going to say, you froze up on my end. I don't know which one of us had the drop, but
the computer started to go into sleep mode or something.
Uh-oh.
I had a couple of updates come through while we're here, too, that caused that earlier issue. So obviously there's a method. And that should keep your gear a little bit drier and cleaner. You know, the multi-bags, garbage bags, dry bags, things like that. The other thing, and I know you do it, I know I do it, is if you can at all avoid it, your pack should never touch the ground.
And that was on my list too, is one of the things you can do while you're at setup is if you can keep your stuff off the ground, especially at night, like in Nova Scotia here, and I'm sure in other places anywhere where the humidity is a big part, so most coastal provinces, states, whatever you want to be, countries, at night, as it cools down, water, you know, condenses, yada, 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 you're going to get a lot of moisture, you're going to get a lot of dew. So what would have been nice and dry last night, you could wake up to having quite a bit of moisture on the stuff that you have sitting on the ground. And this isn't just your pack and stuff like that. Keep in mind your knife, your axes, your saws, your cookware, your stove, stuff like that. That could be moisture it's sitting in for long periods of time. And even with good stainless steel and stuff like that, that could create some pitting. It might even, you know, create some rusting at the rivets and stuff like that. If you've got a high carbon knife, it's definitely going to mar that up a little bit. Keeping your stuff off the ground is probably my next biggest method I tell people to try and keep their gear not only dry, but as we stated in our title here, clean and not lost. You set something down, higher risk of losing it.
Yeah. So, I mean, I'm not necessarily the best at it, but the reality is I try really hard for this. And it's because if everything has a place and you continually put it in that place, it's easier to find things. It's much less likely you're going to lose them, damage them, destroy them. So 100%, my knife goes in my pocket. My saw and my axe always get tied to the pack in the same way, in the same place. Everything has like a layer or a location in my pack that it needs to be in. And if I change it, I struggle with that, but all that is designed from years of experience of where will I look when I go for it? How do I keep light things together? So all my cook gear is together, all my food's together, all my clothes are together. It makes it a bit more efficient and it helps keep things clean. Those separate bags, when you do take something out of your pack, you have that thing you need, you open it up, you do your thing, you put it back together. It's easier to keep it neat and tidy. Some people like the people who are really into lightweight, they put everything in one bag and it's just one jumble. And I understand the reasoning behind that. The thing is, there's more risks to that.
And I kind of agree with that too. I likewise understand the reason for throwing everything into one bag, and some people that works for them. For me, it's I like redundancies and stuff, especially like when it comes to fire starting, cutting stuff like that. The you know the old adage of two is one and one is none. It's kind of the same with your layering system. Same as like I said, trying to keep warm. If you're just wearing your base layer, you're really not wearing that much at all. Because if anything happens and that comes off, you're down to skin. So it's better to have better, more layers. And in the reverse, if you're trying to keep something dry, the more barriers you can put between the outside moisture and it, the better off you're going to be in case something fails on that. Which kind of brings me to another thing, is actually doing some waterproofing off your own. And we've tried a couple of these products. We had somebody reach out to us there, and you've tried that, Ben, and it works good. And it's literally like a waterproofing that goes on materials, and not only like... I'm trying to remember the name of it, but this is a beeswax substance that you have.
King there. Something. Was it Kingfisher?
Kingfisher, I think.
Yeah. Here's a piece of it. I still have a piece of it. I've used it on a bunch of things, and it's not far. Like I'm sure
and what I love about this method is it kind of works twofold. Not only does it waterproof, it adds a little bit of durability to some stuff. And I'm thinking like with canvas. If you take a canvas bag... and even if you take a tea light, you know, if you want to do the real budget-friendly version of this, you just take a tea light and you rub it over canvas, and then you take a hair dryer and you heat that up and it'll saturate that material. Not only does it add a layer of waterproofing to it, it adds a little bit more durability to it, simply because that material is less likely to pit or pick or anything like that. It doesn't tear as easy. Stuff brushes away from it better, so I find it stays cleaner. Adding something like that is another real big method that I recommend to a lot of people, especially if they want to do home crafty stuff or keep the budget in mind. They can't afford those high-end rain gears, you know, the big fancy tarps and stuff like that. You can run out to the dollar store, spend 10 bucks, get yourself a bag of tea light candles, and hopefully you or your significant other has a hair dryer kicking around home. And you can waterproof most materials, like jean, canvas, anything with a tight weave to it, you can pretty much do this to, and it works relatively well. The problem with it is a little breathability goes out the window. And if you're doing it on, like, pants or something like that, and I've seen it done with mineral spirits and beeswax, I think, and they make, like, an iron iron cloth pant, yeah, they're waterproof, and yeah, you can walk through thorns, but boy goodness, do they ever kind of... have a hum to them at the end of the day because you can't breathe out of them. You know what I mean? Picture wearing leather pants.
It's very much. And so the wax and even the oils, they work really good with natural materials. So generally cottons, things like that. If you get into the polyesters and stuff, I find that they tend to act up a bit more. And that's when you end up having to use the silicones and the different types of sprays. And there's plenty available through, if you look at tent waterproofing, you can get these materials.
And those spray-on ones are great for those synthetic materials, like you said. Different weave, different material. Know the material you're putting on. And there's tons of stuff on YouTube for this. But a cheap one for waterproofing is literally like silicone caulking and mineral spirits. You can mix that up certain amounts. Don't know. Haven't tried this myself lately. And you can saturate your tarps and stuff in that. And I mean, it makes an awesome waterproofing. Or I've seen people paint them on. I've seen people try to keep it warm and aerosol it on with one of those back can sprayers. I'd be a little hesitant to that one because there'd be a lot of blowback. And I don't know if I want to be breathing that stuff in, even with a mask. I'm sure some would seep in around my nose and it'd just be on my skin. I don't know if I like that idea personally. But I have seen it done, and it looked like it was quite effective.
I what was I going to say? I've used the Neverwet. Have you ever used that product?
Is that that hydrophobic stuff that you can put on smooth surfaces and, like, water beads off the stuff? I haven't used it. I've seen it.
I had it. I've tried it on a few things. You're supposed to be able to do clothing, boots, jackets. I did an entire jacket in it. It causes like a frosted look to it, and it washes out though, like one or two washes and it's completely gone. But it'll last a fair length until you wash it type seal. So however it works, I guess the agitation and the soap will break it down. It's pretty good, but honestly, I found it expensive for what it was. But know that there are options out there. There's a lot of products out there to waterproof gear. But I think you really hit the nail on the head. When you waterproof gear, you change its properties. And so if you're wearing it, it becomes less breathable, and you're more likely to just end up kind of damp inside and sticky. and stinky.
And with the waxier stuff, it can actually make the material stiffer. I know, like on the old chainsaw bags that we used to get, they're called just canvas bags. We used to get them from the dockyards. We used them as chainsaw bags. But anyway, we'd do that to them, and the material would actually become stiff. And in the cold, winter and stuff, you could actually potentially get cracking in it. Not that the material would crack, but you would see a crack in the wax from where it was covered. Yeah. And then you got to heat that stuff back up and kind of heal those places. So it's definitely a viable option. Just realize it may no longer be good for severe cold weather. Not that it will destroy it. It just could do that cracking. You'll get gaps, and it may not be 100% waterproof until you heat it back up and it kind of self-heals. But it's still a method that I still use a lot today, and I still really like, because generally I don't do a ton of cold weather camping in the same bags and outfits and setups that I would take out warm weather camping. So my cold weather stuff is going to be treated differently than my warm weather stuff, if that makes any kind of sense, I guess.
Yeah, no, it makes perfect sense. Yeah, I've had a bit of experience with that. I've done a few things. That's kind of why they put oil in it. The right amount of oil or kind of gives it softer, makes it the temperature range a bit more. If you just use the candle, honestly, it doesn't have to get quite very cool at all, and it starts to flake off. And if you put too much on it, it gets worse. But if you do that, your pants or jacket, that stiffness actually will steal your energy, because that extra effort it takes to push that clothing around, it does rob you. It's a little bit of a vampiric effect.
So I mean, it does kind of have its drawbacks, and you're going to have to weigh these things out, much like Ben said there. So, and I suppose if you were walking like 10 kilometers and you were using just a little bit more energy every time, by the end of 10 kilometers, it might be like walking 10 and a half or 11 kilometers, which doesn't sound like a lot, but it's a cumulative effect.
You try wearing lightweight, flexible clothing or clothing that dries well. Like, there's one of the reasons they talk about cotton versus polyester. So if you wear polyesters or synthetic materials in the woods, which is what they recommend nowadays, it's much lighter, much easier to move. It's less abrasion preventative and stuff like that. But it's much easier to walk. If it gets damp, the synthetic materials really don't change your effect. They may stick to your clothing a little bit more, but jeans will really steal the energy out of you. So I guess that's something we didn't necessarily intend, but even your material choices will determine how quickly it dries. So if you're going to have to get wet, choosing a material that dries quickly and rapidly on its own is a huge bonus there, right?
Yeah, because just like you said, you hit the nail on the head. Those organic or natural materials, they absorb a lot of water. As they absorb water, they swell. So not only are they, you know, heavier because they're holding that water, they're now thicker and a lot more difficult to move around because they're literally larger in size. So definitely a good thing. I never thought about that before. I guess I do it subconsciously. The pants that I go out with are a ripstop material. They're a synthetic. They bead water well. They're very abrasive resistant. And they don't change much when you're wet. And I'm just noticing now that everything that I wear out in the woods generally in the summer is a synthetic material, including the... I tend to wear long sleeve shirts when I go out because I sunburn easy, and they're generally a Gore-Tex or a UV resistant material, but it's still some form of polyester spandex. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, in search and rescue, they recommended against jeans at all. I spent most of my life in the woods with jeans. I don't really have a huge problem with it, but there is a truth to what they're saying. When you wear these products, it has a negative effect. So keep an eye on that and make sure that you're considering that. Like, if you're out for a few minutes, probably doesn't really matter. It's what you're comfortable with. But if you're getting wet, you're getting dirty, these add on, right? So that, yeah.
So we talked a little bit about how you can bury yourself to stay dry, or you can create barriers to stay dry and think about what you're wearing. I guess where I'd like to go to from here is your actual setups. You can... Or before that, even your travel plans. Try to avoid low-lying areas in damper conditions. Generally, water runs downhill. It's a common, you know, it's a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's an accepted standard. Water runs downhill. So the lower areas you go, it's going to be damper and generally cooler. You want to say something to go with the hat there, Ben?
No, I'm just playing with it.
Oh, okay.
I like playing with it. It's a good hat, though.
It's an excellent hat.
Good hat, keep the rain out.
I was about to say, that's actually something we could bring up in the clothing. Is a wider brim hat actually saves you a lot. And if anybody's seen the videos and stuff with Ben and I there, I wear a leather hat. It's kind of a rawhide hat that's oilskin treated. It's a little heavy, a little warm. But the trade-off is it's great in the rain. Like, it's pretty wide, protects my face, most of my shoulders. And that water will run off and definitely go down my back onto hopefully my rain jacket or something like that, you know, and kind of continue running off. There's no chance of it going down around the back of my neck. It also keeps a lot of the needles and stuff like that from falling down my neck and bugs and things like that, keeping me cleaner as I'm moving through the woods. Because if you get dirty and damp, man, you got a recipe for a lot of stuff going bad. Chafing and rashing and potentially funguses and stuff like that. And people are laughing at that, but you can get like trench foot. Trench foot's a fungus, and it doesn't take much to get it. Athlete's foot is a form of fungus.
That's a really good point. There's a lot of negative health effects to getting wet and damp. Like you said, it steals your energy. You could go hypothermic. Like you said, you can get skin irritations and conditions as a result of it. That chafing, I've been in the woods chafed. It is absolutely horrible. I mean, you get like irritation, redness, inflammation, it's extreme pain, and it may mean the difference between you making it out and you just basically passing out in pain. I have seen people pass out in pain from this stuff. So it's a serious thing. This, now that we just talked about it, like you mentioned your leather hat, I have a Tilly hat. This is a Tilly hat also, but this is not the one I'm talking about. That's more of a cotton material. I think this one's a bit more of a synthetic material. And I waxed it, and it does help a lot with the rain. So I often wear one of these. This is a more lightweight summer one. But a good hat does do a lot of stuff for you. Keeps the sun off you, can keep the water off you. So that's a good point.
Anyway, we kind of jumped back to clothing just because you had the hat up and it was a couple of good points. But yeah, basically where you set up, where you're walking, try to stay at a low-lying areas. It goes without saying, if you don't have to cross a river, don't cross the river. You know what I mean? It sounds straightforward and foolish, but truthfully, I've been in the situation where you're just like, oh, I wonder what's on the other side of the river. Do you really need to know? And what's the risk in crossing that river? How cold is it out? I've crossed a river that's only been ankle deep in the spring and being like, ah, it's just my feet. But now I have cold feet, which ended up giving me a cold body. I had to shut down my whole trek in the woods, make a fire, dry myself out, and warm up. Because it was starting to become a real problem. For a river crossing, I never really had to make. You know what I mean? It was just curiosity and stubbornness that got me.
You probably have noticed this in your time with me, that I'm probably not Mr. Safety in the woods as much as I could be. I might take the odd risk I probably shouldn't, and so have you. I've seen you do it. But one of the things I've always been a bit leery of, and I know some people have even tried to make fun of me on this, is I don't just run across a river if I don't need to, and I will take my time to find the best way across a river. Because when you're in water, water flows faster than you think. There's oftentimes deep spots that you won't see. And rocks are very slippery in the water. And if you fall, you can really injure yourself and be absolutely soaked. So when I was in search and rescue, that was often brought up, like river crossings. Mm-hmm. A lot of people just said, oh, you're on a bear and you just do that and you just walk straight across the river. And I always balked at that. I was like, or like,
flag it, find the best place to cross, come back to your flagging, retake your bearing, and keep going. That's the way it should be done in my mind.
You ruin gear. You get your boots and stuff wet, you could be out for the day. That's the problem. Like a good pair of like hiking boots that are absolutely soaked because you went waist deep in water, they're not drying today. I don't care what the weather is. Like,
prime example, you and I went out the first time, I knelt down just to put wood in the fire and accidentally dropped my foot into the brook. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I was out for a good 2-3 hours while I let that boot, like I wasn't out, but I was stuck next to the camp for a good 2-3 hours until that dried out, because it just wasn't drying, and I didn't want to run the risk of getting any kind of swamp foot or something like that, you know what I mean? Or just chafing and getting blisters out in the back of the woods. So I had to set up a fire, lay my sock out to dry, tear the insole out of that boot, open it up as much as I could, get the heat in there. It's a leather boot, so as it dried, because I was trying to dry quickly, it shrunk. I mean, there was a lot of crap that went down with that. It's just a major inconvenience that's completely unnecessary with a little forethought.
Leather. So there's a lot of good products usually made out of like a beeswax and some kind of oil that leather must be treated. If it's, especially if it's a risk of getting wet, make sure you protect. So leather boots, leather belts, knife cases, all these things, regular maintenance will help keep them waterproof and protect it. And if they do get, you have to dry them correctly and you have to make sure you reapply like mink oil or something to it. That's a really good point with
because leather swells when it gets wet, it shrinks when it gets dried out. And I mean, I've ruined a brand new pair of motorcycle gloves because I got wet in a rainstorm and I threw them over my exhaust thinking it would warm them up. And they shrunk down and I couldn't get my fingers back in them. So.
Yeah. And I tried to save a good pair of leather motorcycle gloves by putting the oil on them. And they became like ultra grippy. And it took like 4 or 5 days for them to get back to the state that I like them to be in.
So Danny's joined us in the comments here. He recommends checking out Crappy Tire, Canadian Tire. I mean, Crappy Tire is a slang term from this side. But anyway, Canadian Tire, if you're looking for a decent rain suit, Stormfighter is the brand. It's more of a rubber type material, great flex and durability. Suit is around $80. And that's kind of what I was talking about, though that sounds a little better than what I was talking about. For the big box brands, they come in a bag. You kind of get both pieces. They're a rubber PVC kind of material. Super waterproof, but they're pretty rigid. The ones I'm thinking of, I'm not sure about these Stormfighter ones, but I'm picturing like what I used to wear in the lobster boat. You know what I mean? Minus the old oil skin cap, but that kind of stuff.
You know what I say about Canadian Tire? Never pay full price at Canadian Tire.
No. And that is the thing. Canadian Tire tends to put everything on sale at some point. So what else did I want to say on location? We talked about hanging your bag up. Keeping your gear off the ground as well as you can. And depending on where you're going to be bedding down for the night, you should be on the highest part of ground even where you are at. One, heat travels up. It's probably going to be warmer. And two, water runs down again. If you're sleeping in a tent, you don't want that pooling under you. And a lot of people say, oh, I'm on top of the hill. But if you're camping in a hollow at the top of that hill, you're still essentially sitting in a bowl. And once it fills up with water, you're going to be wet. So I've even seen it where I've had to dig trenches. And I use that word loosely, but literally like little trenches around my tent to make sure that the water would shed off, because I wasn't 100% sure if I was sitting in a bowl or not. It looked like the most flat ground I could get into. But sometimes you have to run the risk of what's the flattest ground you can get into versus where can you actually lay down and sleep, because the flattest ground you can lay on may be completely covered in stone or something like that. So you may have to do a trade-off. Just things to keep in mind. Keep an eye of where you're setting up. Hammocks tend to have a little better benefit here because you're suspended between trees. However, if you're around a lake and you're sleeping and for whatever reason you think the lake rises and you're flooding out, you could still end up getting wet when you fall out of your hammock.
That's a pretty random scenario you brought up there, my friend.
Maybe it's because I've experienced this firsthand with a bunch of people around. But so seriously. One of
the problems you had there that we can bring up is with a hammock, drip lines are a real thing.
And that's what happened in my case and what I was going to, but go ahead.
Yeah, now that you've mentioned, but you've brought it in. Great segue into this, buddy. Is on your lines, another line is tied off and drips down. And then when water comes, it hits that line and drips before it gets into your hammock and your underquilt, which was an underquilt I think I loaned you and that you had somehow filled with water.
Because it was raining fairly hard and it was dripping in from both ends. And there was enough water that it slightly pooled. So as I turned, it sloshed. And I got wet. And I'm like, Why is water sloshing in a hammock? This doesn't compute. And it had been raining hard, hard, hard for this outing, folks. And I mean, it was a downpour with high winds. It was a kind of a buggery night. Like, we set up a massive tarp of bends for three of us to get under it and try and stay dry and have a little fire. And they say, you know, the shallower the pitch, the more wind it can handle. We had this thing on a pretty shallow pitch to the point where we were sitting on, like, camp chairs and our heads were basically touching the tarp. There was no extra room on this thing, and it was still getting blown around hard to the point where one of the tie-outs actually got ripped on it. And, like, it was just a rough night. But anyway, long story short, the water had pooled in here. I turned it sloshed. For some reason in my head, it processed that the lake had risen because it was raining so hard, and I was the closest one to the water. It was my duty to get up and tell everybody else they had to get up because we had to get out of here. And I knew that Steve, who was, he usually joins us here, but he's not on tonight. Steve was with us too. He was sleeping in a tent a little further up than me, but in a hollow. So if the water had arisen that far, he definitely would have got, you know, drowned or something like that. So anyway, I had all these things going through my head. I spun out of the hammock, fell on the ground, which under the hammock was actually dry because the tarp was set up properly. And then just laid there for a minute trying to figure out what in the hell was going on.
I seem to remember no matter how high that lake went, I was going to be dry.
You were up fairly good because you did the exact thing that needed to be done. You picked the highest point of ground. It was a nice little setup. Even if that lake had risen 4 feet, you still would have been out of the water just because of how far away and how high above it you were. You had no problem.
I think I was like 15 feet in the air, like compared to the lake level.
Yeah, like it was quite high up. Unlike me, who literally, if I had turned the wrong way out of my hammock, I could have walked into the lake.
Yeah, that was a good trip, though.
A lot of fun there. Crap weather, a lot of fun, good food.
But we did stay relatively dry, other than the sloshing, which I still have yet to figure out how you got that much water inside an underquilt that it would slosh.
You know what, bud? It just takes a special kind of skill, and I got those skills.
Yeah. So, I mean, it did rain a lot. It rained enough that, like you said, the amount that ran down the line filled that, like, that was a soaked underquilt. So,
like, there was literally water pooling in this underquilt, and water should have pretty much passed through it. You know what I mean?
Well, it has a water-resistant outer layer, and so obviously that's what held it. I was surprised it did, actually. But yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing. So we've covered, I think, a lot of what I wanted to cover today.
So just one comment here from Red Bear Tactical, just because it sounds interesting and you may know a little bit more about this story. His uncle told him a story about camping near a dam-controlled lake and waking up with his air mattress floating in his tent. Apparently, they had started flooding the lake for some reason, and they were camping below the high water mark. And funny enough, we had something like this happen in Nova Scotia as well. A follower was traveling through, wasn't familiar with the area. He was on a bicycle. He pulled off the road, found what seemed like a nice flat area to set up his tent. Woke up floating away. And if people are not... What's that?
I think it was a motorcycle.
Was it a motorcycle? It's some sort of bike anyway. But if people aren't familiar, Nova Scotia has some of the highest changing tides in the world. Like, it can be super low and then super high around the Shubenacadie area. And funny enough, that's where this feller set up. When it's low tide, there's actually a grassy area there and it's all good. High tide, that's all underwater. You know what I mean? And he actually did a little bit of an interview, and he said at the end of it, he should have caught on something was up when the grass was salty. You know what I mean? Not that he was licking the grass, but as you're setting up a tent and stuff, you notice these things. Trust me.
He tasted the grass. He said that. He said, what kind of person tastes grass? I do. But no, he if I remember the story correctly, he had a little tiny mech-style tent, and it was floating. Like, the whole tent was floating when he woke up.
Yeah, he was literally floating away.
Yeah.
Red Bear again had a very close call, camped near the ocean when he was camped on shore, and we had an extra high tide that night. Water was right to the edge of my shelter. And this is the risk you run by camping too close to water, which we've covered in other videos, so I won't hark on it too much tonight, but that is something to keep in mind to stay dry. Water levels can rise, lakes are not stationary, especially if there was rain recently, and it doesn't have to be where you are that's raining. If it rained off in the distance on top of a mountain or something like that, it does take a little bit of time for the rivers and stuff up there to process the water to bring it down into lakes. So if you had a heavy, heavy rain in a higher area a day before, the day after, and maybe even the day after that, you still run the risk of water levels changing or potentially changing drastically at the bottom edges of these. Going back to my try to stay at a low-lying areas, that's kind of how flash flooding happens. And you don't want to be set up somewhere where that potential is. We all like to get next to the water. We want to hear that bubbling creek while we're sleeping. We want to wake up to see the fog across the lake. Just keep in mind where you're at and where you're setting up. Is there a lot of mountains around you? Are you halfway up a mountain? Like, these are things to just think about and make sure you're making the best decision for your safety so you don't wake up potentially floating away like our friend now over there in Shoopy.
Yeah, so a lot of things to keep in mind, a lot of things to consider, but the end result is, take the time to think about this. This isn't a real thing. Getting wet is a big deal. If your gear gets wet, you're portaging, you're in a canoe, you tip over, or you're just hiking in and you have to cross a river, all these things can happen. Protecting your gear, you know, good packs already offer a certain waterproofness. The rain covers can help, but the dry bags and stuff inside. Those are all good methods. Let's see a smile so something else can be said.
Oh, just John Doe joining us. Funny, I just turned you guys on and I'm sitting here at sunset putting beeswax on my gear zippers. Which is another thing. We never mentioned it for waterproofing, but if you're going over anything with beeswax or some sort of waxy substance, do the zippers on your packs. One, it lubricates them. Two, it actually adds a little bit of waterproofing to it. Don't have beeswax? In a pinch, you can use lip balm. It's going to smell great, still work, a little sticky though, but what works better than that? Wax paper, right out of your drawer from your cooking. You can rub that up and down the zipper. It's going to lubricate it, won't waterproof it quite as good as the actual beeswax, or you can get what's called literally zipper wax. We use it in the fire department on our ice rescue suits and stuff like that. It lubricates and seals. That's exactly what it's supposed to do.
Even a tea light works. It's not quite as good, but yeah, any kind of wax. You're looking for a softer wax. What I think would be an awesome one, but do not do it, is the wax off of a baby bell.
Oh, that's pretty sticky. You know what I mean? I don't know how that would work.
And I'm curious. Never loses the smell of cheese, so I think it would be an attractive nuisance to certain things.
Yeah, so, the rodents would love you, I think.
Yeah. Yeah, and there's nothing worse than waking up in the middle of the night to a rodent touching your face.
I've had it happen maybe twice in my life. What about you? Just because we're on the topic. Have you ever woken up with anything literally in your sleeping bag?
No, I was in Kedgy. I was sleeping in one of the cabins. I had some coconut oil I was using to treat a wound. We'll call it that. Because it helps alleviate the swelling and chafing. And this thing was probably attracted by this. And it got up on the bed and it walked up and it actually touched my face. Like I felt something hit my beard. And I woke up and here's this thing staring at my face. And I spent the rest of the night trying to chop the thing in half. because... Yeah, I don't like being woken up by things touching my face that I'm not in a serious, committed relationship with.
That's what... I'll watch what I'll say here. It's only happened to me twice. Once was a rat and once was a squirrel. So the rat, I was actually sleeping out for a paintball tournament and I had paintballs with me. If anybody doesn't know what a paintball is, it's basically a gel capsule filled with a fish oil-based... oil with dye, and it's basically a sport where you shoot each other with these paintballs, and if you hit, you're out. Anyway, long story short, rodents love these things because there is a lot of oils and omega-3s in these things. They're non-toxic. You can eat them. They taste like snot, or not snot, but they taste like crap. And anyway, they love them, and a rat came in and was trying to eat my box of paint. That was that time. And once, just somehow, I was out in the woods sleeping with a hammock set up and woke up to a squirrel inside the hammock with me. Not sure what it was after, not sure how it got there. It just, I kind of cracked my eyes open and he was sitting on my feet and kind of looked at me and then wandered off. And that's the only two experiences I've ever had with anything like that. But anyway, we digress on that a little bit. Getting back to the waterproofing and cleanliness, and you may say, Ben, Robert, you haven't actually said anything about cleanliness yet, but the fact of the matter is the drier you can stay and the better you protect your gear, it's going to add to cleanliness. If you get wet, even damp, dirt's going to stick to you a lot more. Your own body sweats and oils and stuff like that. It's not going to have a chance to breathe. It's going to stay on you more. You're just going to get dirtier naturally. Pine needles will stick to you worse. The only thing that might not is pine pitch. It may roll off you a little bit if you're wet, because you have that water to make a little bit of a barrier, but generally it's still going to stick to you too, and you're still going to get wet regardless, or sorry, you're going to get sap over you either way. But if you can stay dry, you generally stay cleaner. Not only you as a person, but your gear, and that's kind of where these two things went hand in hand.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it. Like we said, don't lay your pack underground. It's for two things. One is going to get damp. One is going to get dirty. That dirt gets in. It starts to wear down on your materials. It's a nasty thing. So that's really where we wanted to get with that. Like, you know, clean and dry kind of go one on one, right? If you stay dry, you're probably fairly clean.
And they're horribly underappreciated while people are out in the woods. People don't realize that staying dry and staying clean are two things that are going to add a ton to your comfort. Or on the flip side, getting damp and dirty really is going to take away from your experience. It's incredibly underrated. Most people, if they're going out in the woods, oh, I don't need rain gear. I'll just dry off as I'm doing things. Or, oh, it's only a little bit of water. Or, oh, I'll bathe in the river or whatever the case may be, which is all good. But did you bring soap and a cloth? Like, you know what I mean? Staying clean, staying dry are major things in the woods. Because as we mentioned way back, little rashes, little blisters add up to big problems depending on how far away you are from somebody potentially being able to get you or you getting back out. If you chafe up bad under your arms or in between your legs or something like that, you may not be able to walk properly. Like, I've been chafed so bad in between my thighs from a pair of jeans, I couldn't walk for a day. Like, I just could not physically walk. The pain was too much. I had to sit down, basically build a fire, try and dry my legs out, use some Usnia and stuff like that to try and soothe some of the burning feeling, and then basically bandage myself up with a couple of bandanas the next day to add even more layers of protection so things wouldn't chafe, because literally even the air blowing past it caused uncontrollable pain at this point. And that's how I slowly limped myself out. And I mean, even at that, I took a lot of unnecessary risks to try and cut time off, just so I wouldn't have to deal with the pain of chafing. Because once it lasts so long and it reaches such a level, you kind of stop thinking clearly. And that's another thing people don't realize is when you start taking unnecessary risks, that's the point where you're not technically thinking clearly. And anything that drives you to that point sooner is a massive thing in the woods. And that's why staying dry, staying clean all kind of loops into safety.
Yeah. Anyways, I think we've covered this topic pretty good.
Yep. Starting to beat a dead horse. I agree.
But yeah, I think as always, get out there, have fun, be safe, stay dry, stay clean, and let us know how it goes.
Night, folks. If you do get a chance to get out there, definitely drop us a line. We love to hear your stories. See you next time.